Caroline, Willie, D-Mays, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook Sports. So Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks on the Move the Sticks podcast said they've heard the Titans could be exploring trading up from 11 to that third overall pick, taking where the Arizona Cardinals are picking in the NFL draft at number 3. So who would be available at number 3? I think we can all agree, probably more likely than not, C.J. Stroud and Bryce Young will go 1-2. Whether it's Bryce Young first, C.J. Stroud second, or vice versa, I see it most likely shaking out that those are going to be your number 1 and number 2 picks. Crazy things happen. Weird things happen. Anything can happen. But it's probably more likely than not that you'll have Will Levis and Anthony Richardson available at that number 3 overall pick. Now, Florida had their pro day yesterday. Rand Carthon was in attendance. Gator alum. Back in his old stomping grounds at Florida's pro day. And I have heard so much about Anthony Richardson's pro day. How well he played. How good he looked. How strong he looked. And what I can't stop hearing about is about how he hit the ceiling. About how he hit the ceiling. Did you guys see that video on Twitter? How he just lobbed a ball up and hit the ceiling. And that's all I heard on ESPN, on Twitter. Oh my gosh, he hit the ceiling. This was Anthony Richardson.
Anthony's arm strength is his superpower, but everything just looks so easy. As you can see, everything's so fluid. Ooh. As you can see, he hit the ceiling right there.
Doggone it.
There we go. We get quarterback hitting the ceiling. As you see, he gets a big laugh right there.
Check the box. All the other quarterbacks hit the ceiling. I got to hit the ceiling, too. Yeah. All right, mission accomplished.
Raise the roof. There it is.
Look at him. He's like, yeah, throw 37.
All joking aside, this should be scripted because at some point there will be an article written about how Anthony Richardson's arm was so live he hit the roof.
There was a conspiracy theory back in the studio that you hit the roof on purpose. Can you confirm or deny that report?
Oh, yeah, you know, I seen Will Levis do it, you know, so I just tried to up him once I tried to put a hole through it, you know, so
am I being grumpy?
This is what happens, though. Like, this is why the quarterbacks go flying up the chart. I wonder, as a football scout, how you view something like that. I will say this. Uh-huh. Floyd Reese, back in the day, the late Floyd Reese, I always love telling these Floyd Reese stories. He said there was one guy ever that he scouted that he actually put in the reel with the scouts his basketball footage. Mm-hmm. Do you remember Matt Jones for Arkansas years ago?
Yeah.
Incredible athlete, right? And he was a great college quarterback at Arkansas. Off the charts, could dunk a basketball. And that made the reel. So the athleticism part of it is good. But at the end of the day, does that help you be a good football player, right? You say this all the time about wide receivers, Derek. I don't care how fast you run. If you can't run a route and you can't catch the ball, you're not going to be good.
Yeah, it's like having
Ronaldo Nehemiah. Remember the track stars for a while? That was a trendy thing. You take the track star who wins the sprints. He's never played football. Ronaldo Nehemiah. You put him in a football uniform. They didn't do that much, right? Yeah. They weren't that good because they weren't football players. So I don't know. The throw the ball off the roof and stuff, that doesn't do anything for me. The backhand spring, I saw that. Like he ends it with the big flip. Great. But what's happening on 3rd and 8?
Yeah.
This isn't gymnastics.
You know, my first thought was, okay, if he didn't mean to hit the roof, I don't want that quarterback.
That's a bad
one. That's his that's the accuracy issue that he has. So when they said that, I'm like, did he mean to hit the roof or did he hit the roof by accident? Because if he hit it by accident, then damn it, we don't need to draft you.
Yeah, we're good.
Yeah, we're good. You showed us enough. You hit the roof. Not on purpose. You hit the roof. But this is how the NFL works when it comes to quarterbacks. And really only quarterbacks. At the beginning of all the hoopla and, you know, beginning of February or late January, there's like two quarterbacks or one or two quarterbacks. Everybody's talking about those one or two quarterbacks. And then all of a sudden, that third guy or that fourth guy that really people wasn't paying attention to, knew was good but wasn't paying attention to, had a grade of maybe a second or third round. All of a sudden, in shorts, no rusher, no pads on, he started to wow the crowd. This throw, that throw. Mind you, everything's scripted. This throw, that throw.
Yeah.
We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And all of a sudden, it goes from being a two-horse race to now a three-horse race. And then a three-horse race to now a four-horse race. And everybody's wild about now these other two guys. But then once you turn on a film and you lay everything down, in actuality, there's still only two quarterbacks. These four quarterbacks that are in play for that number one pick, well, really three, because I don't think Will Levis will go number one. If he did, I think I would faint if he went number one. But just say all four of these quarterbacks, you put them all down on paper and you watch all their film, it goes back to a two-horse race. C.J. Stroud and Bryce Young, that's what it goes back to. Now, these other guys, yeah, we can – they've shown some promise. But if they were – if these other two guys were cornerbacks, running backs, receivers, they would not budge in a draft. They would stay status quo. But because the quarterback is the most important position on the field, every little thing that they do, it either counts for them in a tremendous way or it counts against them. It could be the slightest thing, and it counts against them. It only works that way with the quarterback, and rightfully so, because this is the guy that you believe that's going to lead you to a Super Bowl. So everything is either scrutinized or everything is either praised. The smallest thing, like hitting a roof, who gives a damn?
That's what I, you know? Am I grumpy for not caring about that?
No, you're not. I don't care.
Why am I supposed to care about him being able to hit the ceiling? Yeah, I mean, it's a potential NFL quarterback. In actuality,
you're not supposed to care.
And that's why I wonder, you know, I know that Anthony Richardson had, you know, an out-of-this-world mm-hmm. combine. I know that he looked really good throwing yesterday at his pro day. I know that the NFL athleticism score gave him a 99, which is wonderful. I could see that with my own two eyes. 6'4", 250 pounds. He's a monster. His athleticism is off the charts. Mm-hmm. I know I can see that. But how much am I supposed to weigh his performance at Pro Day and the Combine when he's wearing spandex and running a 40 versus what I saw with my eyes of him at Florida?
Mm-hmm.
When he had a 58% completion percentage, when he had 17 touchdowns and 9 interceptions last season at Florida. Mm-hmm. What's more important? Because to me, watching Anthony Richardson at Florida, like, I've seen a lot. I see the potential. I see the upside. I see the ceiling go higher and higher and higher as he continues to impress with all of his testing at the Combine and Pro Day. And you see the athleticism and how important that is. I know I see that. But am I supposed to overlook his performance at Florida because he can run a 4.440?
You're not supposed to. But again, it goes back to the position.
Yeah.
If I told you that at the beginning of all this whole process, that receiver A was... and he's projected, you know, I don't know, say a late first rounder and a second rounder. And you put on a film, and receiver A is, he catches 45% of his passes, and he's okay with his route. But the people do grade him as a second round pick. But he goes into the combine and run a 4.2, broad jumps, whatever, you know, does well in the cone drills and everything else, catches the ball well. Do you think he's moving up in the draft? He's not, because what he is a 40% catcher when it matters. The film shows, the film is not going to lie to me. He's a 40, 45, 50% catcher when it counts. When you have on pads and a helmet and cleats and somebody's in front of you and that ball's coming at you, you are a 45% catcher, 50% catcher. I don't give a damn if you run a 3.9 or your shuttle was great. At the end of the day, like Riddick said, accuracy for a quarterback matters more than anything, okay? For a receiver, catching the football matters more than anything. And if you are a 45% catcher, 50% catcher coming out of college, what changes just because you run a 4.2? You were a 4.2 guy in college.
Right.
What changes?
I would think it's similar to just because you can throw it a mile,
mm-hmm.
right? Just like a guy with a 100-mile-an-hour fastball. That in and itself, it doesn't matter if you can't throw the ball over the plate if you're a pitcher, right? 100 is great, but it's strikes, it's pitching, it's hitting the corners, it's setting up your off-speed pitches, it's having the off-speed pitches. Mm-hmm. It's the same. What did we say about Richardson? This is the biggest alarm for me. Now, he's young, right? He's got room for growth. But 53% completion percentage, that's a red flag for me, right? I don't care what offense you're running. In today's game of football, like back in the 70s or 80s, if you were over 50%, you're like, okay, over 50%, that's good. Now, you got to be 60, 65%. To really be efficient in the way the passing games work. I don't care what offense
because
you're running.
Because it's a passing league.
It's a college, passing. It's the game exactly. of football is a passing game.
Yeah, so if you're hitting 50% of your passes in college.
53% is too low.
That is too low.
Compared to Hendon Hooker, who had almost a 70% completion percentage. Yep. C.J. Stroud and Bryce Young, both in that 65% yep. range.
And the system can affect it some. But 53%, I don't care what it is, that's too low.
It's concerning that's an alarm. To me. But TD loves Anthony Richardson. Mm-hmm. He loves the upside of Anthony Richardson. And so he tried to convince us all to love Anthony Richardson as much as he loves Anthony Richardson. So I listened.
And we love TD.
We love TD.
He carries weight.
Whatever TD says, I generally believe it. If it's TD's guy, okay, fine. I believe it. I trust it. I don't need to watch the games. TD likes him, so I'll take it. But I listened to TD and what he had to say about Anthony Richardson. And I may have just been convinced. And we'll get into that coming up next. Caroline Willie D-Mace, 1025-1063, the game.
Can his style translate to the NFL? You think yes. Why?
Yeah, I don't think it's a matter of his style translating to the NFL. I think his style, like, it fits it. You have guys now, you just look at the combine. You have guys who are just, like, as big as him running 4.3s, 4.4s. You have to be able to elude pressure in the pocket. You have to be able to, you know, take off and run. This man defense, backs are to you. Everything is covered. You got to be able to run and get that first down on 3rd and 13. You have to be able to also combine that with the ability to stand in the pocket and deliver a ball far down the field or deliver that mid-range route across the middle. Here's the thing. He could do all of that. Now, are there accuracy issues? Yeah, there are. Are there, you know, issues with just kind of more touch? Yeah. But those are things that you can fix.
There you go. That was TD Jerron Davenport on Stillman and Company yesterday. And just to clarify, TD's top quarterbacks in this group are Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud. C.J. Stroud is number one. Bryce Young is number two. He likes the potential of Anthony Richardson and sees the potential of Anthony Richardson.
So he likes Richardson over Levis? Is that where he's got him right now?
I'm not sure. Okay. But TD says Stroud's his top quarterback, Bryce Young after him, but sees the potential and feels the potential that Anthony Richardson has and sees how high the ceiling could be for Anthony Richardson. I'm not sure how he feels about Will Levis, though.
What he said at the end is really what, to me, is the key thing that if you're a scout and you're a football guy, you know, what do you think can be done? Accuracy and touch issues. Like, there's plenty of quarterbacks that have had that. Like, I think Jake Locker had accuracy and touch issues. When he was on, he looked really good, and he was a great athlete, right? He could run, but he just couldn't connect all the dots. Then there was also staying healthy. That was a whole nother thing with Locker, and so it just sort of crumbled over time. But he had some weaknesses coming out of the draft that people had question marks on that stayed question marks. So the question of how much can you work with a guy on accuracy and touch? I think that's a interesting philosophical question, and different people have different answers, right? Some guys will say, I can work with them. I'll teach them. We'll get them together. We'll work on some things, footwork, all this, and he'll improve there. And he's got the things that you can't teach. But I think there are some that say that, you know, it is a skill. Either you got it or you don't when it comes to accuracy and touch.
I think it does come down to philosophy, because you're right. I've heard both of you can't coach accuracy. It's just something that you have or you don't. But then part of me thinks, I mean, really? I mean, I feel like you can coach up certain things and then the accuracy will then come. So I don't necessarily fully subscribe to the idea that you, quote unquote, can't coach accuracy. But to what extent can you get there? Can you at least see the what you have to work with, the foundation. And with Anthony Richardson, he has things you can't coach. Mm-hmm. You cannot coach size. Anthony Richardson has that.
The size-speed combo. Size he's got some amazing things. Well, how do you feel about that, Derek? Did you see quarterbacks that improved touch over time and accuracy? I mean, there's certainly you improve in understanding defenses, things like that. But what about just the mechanics of the touch?
You know, it all depends on where, you know, a guy is at in their career. You know, say a guy coming out of college, he's completing, you know, mid-60s. You watch the game and you think, because I've always, and I truly believe this, college quarterbacks are not, they are not being groomed to play in the NFL. If you make it, they're great. College quarterbacks, and for that matter, college players, they are there, what, to win games for the university.
Mm-hmm.
If you make it to the NFL, that's great. That's because your talent allowed you to do so. But we're not in the business of trying to get you necessarily ready for the NFL because everybody may not make it. They're not walking into living rooms saying to mom and dad, yeah, we're going to get your son. In 3 years, your son's going to be ready to go to the NFL if he wants you. They can't say that because that would be a lie. It would be a flat-out lie because out of all those college athletes, only 1%, maybe 2% are making it to the next level. So you can't sit down and tell a family, yes, your son will go to the NFL. If he does the things that he needs to do and he produces on the field, he has a shot. But we are not here. We are here to make sure three or four things. To make sure that you grow as a human, to make sure that you get a quality education, and to play some good football, to honor that scholarship, and to protect you, to make sure when you send your son to this college, boy, man, boy or girl, that they are protected here. Those are the things that they are required more than likely to do. I'm not required to get your son to the NBA. I mean, to the NFL. I'm not. Well, the NBA, too. Or I'm not required to get your daughter to the WNBA. If they work hard and do the things necessary, then, yes, they have a shot. So when you have a quarterback that is around that mid-60s accuracy, he gets into the NFL, then, yes, you can – you can raise that completion rating and that accuracy up some, but it's not going to go from, oh, this guy couldn't hit the broadside of a barn in college, but then he gets in the NFL and he's the most prolific passer ever. It doesn't work that way.
I think it's hard to teach. Yeah, it's hard to teach accuracy and touch. I don't think hard. It can't be done, mm-hmm. but I think it's tough.
It can be
tough to teach.
It's like running at 40. If you are a 4.6 guy, any trainer that tells you he can get you a 4.3, turn around and walk out the building because he's lying. He or she is lying. They can't do that unless they're giving you some type of drug. Then, yeah, they can.
Yeah.
But if you are just working hard, you're not going to go from a 4.6 to a 4.3. You might go from a 4.6 to a 4.5, somewhere in that range. Drop some tenths
some
of a second off.
And things
yeah,
like that.
Technique yep. and stuff like that. But I can't take you from a 4.6 to a 4.3. Just like this. I can't take you from being a 53%, you know, thrower to a 70% thrower. I can't. I can get that number a little bit higher, yes. But you got to be okay with that as an organization taking an Anthony Richardson saying, man, his accuracy and his touch is not quite there. He's of the four quarterback, he's the lowest of the four. Now we got to be, if we're serious and honest with ourselves as an organization, we say Carolina, for instance, we say we have everything in place. Frank Wright, all these guys, we had everything in place. We got to be okay with taking a 52% guy and making him a 60%, close to a 60% guy. If we draft him that high, we got to be okay with that. That might be his ceiling, 60%. And if you're okay with a 60% passer or 58% passer in the NFL, then okay, draft him.
But it's 53% in college where you generally are not going to be under the heat that you're under in the NFL. So that's another concern, right? That's why a lot, like Football Outsiders, that's sort of their general consensus when they evaluate college quarterbacks is if you are not accurate at the college level, it's unlikely, it's not impossible. Like Josh Allen has proven everybody wrong because people had that label on him. But it's unlikely that you're going to improve and be more accurate at the NFL level where the windows are tighter, the pressure is heavier, the coverages are more complex. It's just very simple.
And the Titans have to make up their minds on that of, can we do it? Can we work with what we have, with what Anthony Richardson has, the foundation that he built in Florida and the things that he just possesses, you know, his intelligence and his size. Can we work with that foundation and groom him into a starting NFL caliber receiver? Do we have the resources in place? Do we like what we see? Mm-hmm. Do we think we can work with it? And if you do and you love him, you go for it. And if you think, I don't know, I mean, it's just we like the size. We like the upside. We just don't really know how much of it is of this Play-Doh is malleable and we're able to work with it and how much of it is just there may be inherent disadvantages in bringing in a guy that is going to need a whole lot of work. It depends on what the Titans think and evaluate and feel about the coach that they have in place.
Or is he going to run at a prolific level like a Fields, like a Lamar Jackson, like a, you know, some of these other guys? That's something to consider, right? Is that how you want to go about it? Like Lamar Jackson is not the most accurate passer. He's good enough, but he also becomes a great quarterback because he's a prolific runner. He's got the lightest feet. He might be the best runner there's ever been when it comes down to it. Mm-hmm. So how do they project Richardson that way? Is that how you want to go about it? He's going to run his way to overcome any shortcomings he might have as an accurate passer. It's a fair question.
And TD says the big thing with Anthony Richardson is there's some plays on film that show tremendous accuracy. So it's more of getting him to be accurate more consistently. And if you just look at Anthony Richardson's stats on a game-by-game basis, that first game against Utah, I was ready to write him in as my Heisman winner week one. He completed almost 71% of his passes with 17 of 24 against Utah and also added on over 100 yards rushing. And then you go to, let's say, last game of the season against Florida State. He completed 33% of his passes.
9 for 27.
So TD has a very fair point that it's there. You can see it sometimes. And that's my biggest thing with Anthony Richardson is I never knew what Anthony Richardson we were going to see on a week-in, week-out basis. Was I going to see Anthony Richardson against Utah and Tennessee, where he threw for over 400 yards against Tennessee? Mm-hmm. Or was it going to be like South Florida and Kentucky, where he struggled to complete a pass? So it's there. You can see it. It's just you don't see it every single week.
I think with Anthony Richardson, you have to bring him along like Green Bay did Rodgers. Rodgers sat back and waited a year. Hell, what the Titans did with Steve McNair. He sat back, 2 years, I believe, before he played.
They played two games, the last two games his second year.
Exactly. So if you're going to go down this route, even Patrick Mahomes, now he even set a year, but I think a lot of that was because Alex Smith was a capable quarterback and he was a really good quarterback. And they wanted to make sure that, I think because that Kansas City playbook is so complex, they wanted to make sure that Patrick Mahomes knew it inside out before they threw him in at quarterback. And when they finally did that second season, away he went. So you got to understand, when you draft a Richardson or even a Will Levis you got to know in your mind that we're okay with him sitting at least a year. You got to be okay. Everybody got to be okay with that in the room. You know, that he's going to sit a year.
Which is what I thought they were doing with Malik Willis.
Yeah.
And they didn't
do
it.
But they were forced. I mean, for whatever reason. Yeah.
They made him the second string quarterback.
Yeah.
That was a mistake.
Which was the wrong thing to do.
Yes.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. Ask D. Mace coming up next. Get those questions in for D. Mace. You can text in, call in, and the best question for D. Mace will win a nice, nice prize, and we'll reveal that coming up next. Caroline Willie, D. Mace, 1025-1063 The Game.
G-Mace. He played 15 years in the NFL.
Quick throw. Touchdown, Derek Mason.
He had over 12,000 receiving yards.
Midfield, and there he goes. 80 yards for the touchdown.
And now you can ask him anything. Have a question about football or life? Now's your time to ask D-Mace.
We'll welcome you in.
Now on Caroline, Willie, and
D-Mace.
On 102.5 and 106.3, The Game and the Game Nashville app.
Ask D-Mace is brought to you by Curation CBD. Find their healing products at curationcompany.com. Curation CBD products curated for life. Use promo code DMASE, D-M-A-S-E, at curationcompany.com for 25% off Curation CBD products. Remember, the best question for D-Mace will, drumroll please, win a pair of tickets to see Queen and Adam Lambert at Bridgestone Arena on October 25th.
Oh, yeah.
So make sure to get those questions in for D-Mace. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Tim is up next with a question for D-Mace. What's up, Tim?
Hey, guys. So back in 1999-2000, when they built the current stadium, Floyd and the powers that be went all in and beefing up the roster and using the salary cap to put the best product on the field to sell PSLs. They had to do it to fund the stadium. And we're about to go through a period like that again with a new stadium coming. And D-Mace, your career, I think, was directly impacted by that because that, after the PSLs are sold, you start having to shed some of the salaries. And I'm just curious, as a player on the field, is that on your radar? Are you aware of that? Do you think about it? Does it impact the guys on the field, the team at all? Or is that just kind of, you know, that's the business end and it goes on and, you know, that takes care of itself and you're just super focused on moving the ball?
Thanks a lot, Tim. I appreciate that. No, players, we don't get into the whole PSL thing. Hell, I didn't find out what PSL meant until later on down the line. but no, players don't, you know, we don't get into, you know, PSLs or who's at the stadium or how many seats they're selling. You know, it looks great once we walk out of the tunnel and it's a packed house, which, you know, we more times than not had a packed house each and every time. At the time we played at Adelphia Stadium, the house was always packed. Rightfully so, we had good teams. But beyond that, players don't pay attention. And I don't even think the players today pay attention to, you know, what teams are doing from a fan seating or selling ticket standpoint. You know, other than, you know, when players want to buy suites and stuff like that, they will, you know, you sort of get into that world then. But other than that, no, we don't pay attention to it.
What kind of things did you hear or pay attention to? Because, like, the business side of things, mm-hmm. I can understand. You're like, hey, that's their job, not mine. Mm-hmm. But to what extent did you, quote unquote, block out the noise or actually, you know, hear things and take it to heart?
Never really. You know, the only time we as a team, I believe, ever paid attention to the stadium is when we moved here. And we were playing in Memphis, and then we had to play at Vanderbilt. And, man, we were just like, when are we going to get our new stadium? And then when we first went into our new, you know, facility, it was like, thank goodness, this is what the NFL is like, you know, because we had a much bigger locker room, and we had about 30 shower heads. At the old place, we had like 6, you know, so guys had to go in shifts. I mean, water was puddling up everywhere. It was just a bad deal for us as a player. So once we got into our new facility, it was like, wow, this is what the, you know, NFL looks like. At
those
least
first
from
couple
a
years
young
so
guy.
Surreal. Like, I even think, like, the media, the fans, like, we didn't fully comprehend that the NFL was here, because when we came to your practices and stuff, it just was so second rate.
Exactly.
You're like, this is the NFL? Like, it didn't really sink in. But it was like day one, that first preseason game, when you played in the new stadium. It was like, now this is what we thought. This is the NFL. And everything changed overnight.
And that's how we felt about the stadium. That's when we started. The closer and closer we got to the stadium being open, that's when players were like, man, I'm glad this is our last season at Vandy. No knock to Vandy. Great. Thank you, you know, for allowing us to play at your stadium. But, man, oh, man, it was not a place you wanted to be at for no longer than what you had to be there.
Especially when you just got to the NFL.
Exactly.
You're ready for the bright
lights. I'm like, man, I took a step back. I'm like, shoot, being at Michigan State was better than this, you know. But we had to go through those growing pains, and ultimately we moved into our new stadium, which was then Adelphia Coliseum. But that's really the only time we paid attention to, the stadium and what was going on.
615-737-1025. Call or text with your Ask D-Mace. Here's an interesting one from Lee. And, of course, no two quarterbacks are the same. But Lee asks, D-Mace, compare Anthony Richardson and Vince Young. And don't forget, Vince Young won big in college. But there, I do remember that very well as a radio host because it was Vince Young, Matt Leinart, and the guy in the backyard, Jay Cutler, right? Three very different guys, two guys who won at a huge, huge level, dominant college quarterbacks, had huge programs, and then it was Jay Cutler versus the world, basically, for the SEC, right? And we were trying to compare them all. That was tough. And Vince Young had tools, but there were questions about accuracy, right?
Yeah. So but I think
Vince, is there a parallel there or no? Do you see something different?
I think Vince had a bigger body of work. He had played
three years.
So the body of work was there. You knew exactly what Vince Young was. And now that I'm looking back on his numbers, he was a 61% passer in college, just 3 years. He got the thing about him is that, and it's unfortunate for Anthony Richardson, it's almost like, man, if you could have stayed another year and watched and allowed the scouts to see the progression, but then he could have ran into the same thing Matt Leinart ran into. Matt Leinart was projected as a top, you know, had he come out the previous year, he was projected a higher pick, but then he ended up coming out the next following year. He was the third quarterback taken, somewhere around there, third or fourth quarterback taken that year. So it could have helped him and it could have hurt him, but at least we would have saw, did he make any progression as a quarterback from year one to the next following year? Well, Vince Young got better from a completion percentage standpoint. He got better. All his numbers got better. His touchdowns, his interceptions went down from his second year to his last year. So he got better as a quarterback. We were able to see that his year. He stayed long enough in college that we were able to see that. We didn't see that from Richardson. So I don't think necessarily there's any parallel or comparison with Vince Young. I think there were two different quarterbacks. The only thing that's the same about them is both of them are black. That's it. That's the only thing about them. That's the only thing about them. But other than that, I think they're two different quarterbacks. We saw the progression of Vince Young in college. So I think they were more satisfied with what they saw, so they wanted to make him a higher pick. Well, Anthony Richardson is still an unknown because we didn't see that full second year from him. If he would have stayed and did what Vince Young did, improve, then we would have said, okay, this guy, you know, he's shown he can improve. He is a legitimate, whatever it is, top five, top 10 pick. But right now, there's a bunch of questions because we only seen one year of that.
Yeah, lack of experience, I think, is one kind of knock on
exactly.
it. Richardson,
yeah.
13 starts in college football.
And Vince Young didn't have that. And that. He had
that
experience.
Jumped out of it. You're right. That I do think it not only starts, but successful starts.
Exactly.
Right? He won a ton. And so I do think, you know, your level of success, how do you do in the big moments, that's got to be a factor as opposed to not –
And Vince
having
played
a lot of
big and big moments,
oh,
too.
Oh, boy,
yeah,
did he ever.
College, so.
Right back to your questions for D-Mace coming up next, 615-737-1025. If you have a question for D-Mace, Caroline Willie, D-Mace, 1025-1063, the game.
D-Mace. He played 15 years in the NFL.
Quick throw. Touchdown, Derek Mason.
He had over 12,000 receiving yards.
Midfield, and there he goes! 80 yards for the touchdown!
And now you can ask him anything. Question about football or life? Now's your time to ask D-Mace.
We'll welcome you in.
Now on Caroline, Willie, and
D-Mace.
On 102.5 and 106.3, The Game and the Game Nashville app.
Ask D-Mace is brought to you by Curation CBD. Find their healing products at curationcompany.com. Curation CBD products curated for life. Use promo code DMACE, D-M-A-S-E, at CurationCompany.com for 25% off Curation CBD products. And remember, the best question for D-MACE will win a pair of tickets to see Queen and Adam Lambert at Bridgestone Arena on October 25th. Let's get back into your questions for D-MACE. Wes is on the line with a question for D-MACE. What's up, Wes?
Hey, good Friday. Happy Friday to everybody. Hope y'all are doing well. My question for you, D-Mace, is today you get to answer a question in place of Chase. So, my question is, on the weeks where Jared is out for vacation, is it less stressful for you guys because you don't have to deal with them, or is it more stressful for Chase for having to fill those roles at the 2 o'clock show?
Thank you, Wes.
Oh, man. Well, now, you might have to ask Chase that question.
He is.
Chase, I think it'd be more stressful.
That's the Ask the Suit segment.
Yeah, because he has to be the suit. Then he and Michelle do their show. And then he has to triple back and do Jared's show. But, you know, I like, you know, when we get off the air, when us three get off and my ride home, I like listening to Jared. Because sometimes he makes me want to just pull over, jump out the car and just like scream. Like, what are you talking about? Like, oh, and sometimes he makes me like, man, he's absolutely right. You know? So I enjoy listening to Jared, and when he's not on, you know, it's like a love hate thing. You know, I love to hate him. No, no, but I enjoy listening to Jared, but I'm sure Chase is stressed out because now he's on triple duty.
Got a lot on his plate.
Yeah, got a lot on his plate.
But he's got to talk to some fun people this week. TD yesterday.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Adam Bingen, David Beauclair earlier in the week. He's just doing a full car wash with all the Nashville media personalities.
A full car wash. Here's one for you. D-Mace, this is from Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
What was your first car?
Ooh, my first car? Drum roll, please. 1985 Ford hatchback. And we called it the Bullet. That was my first car in college. It cost for $500 to purchase. We purchased this from this sweet old lady. And my buddy and I, Sean, who's like a brother to me, both of us put in $250. And we thought, like, man, this is
you're
like,
set now. You
exactly,
got wheels.
Exactly. Like, we got wheels. And we loved that car. Everybody on campus loved it because they knew. Once they saw the Bullet, they knew who was in the building.
The
they
bullet.
Knew it was us. But quick story. Our senior year, well, yeah, both of them, because he ended up getting redshirted. So his redshirt senior year. His mom and dad had got him a different car. It was like a 1980-something, just like all metal. The car rode like a sofa. You sat in that car, you couldn't feel anything. But the only problem with that car is the right driver's side wheel in the front, it was too big for the car. So when you turn, you heard it. But we never changed it. We kept it like that. We kept it that way. But I remember one day, Sean was getting ready to go to class because we lived off campus and it was snowing. Sean went to class, getting ready to go to class. And I guess the car wouldn't start. So he came back up to the apartment and was like, yo, D, did you move the Bullet? I'm like, nah, we hadn't drove the Bullet in like 2-3 weeks, probably a little bit longer than that. It's like, nah, I ain't see the Bullet. What you talking about? It's like, man, the Bullet's gone. So I put on my clothes. We searched the whole parking lot, like the whole strip, and it was just a bunch of apartments. We searched that whole thing. We could not find the Bullet. Somebody stole the Bullet.
Oh, no way.
Yes.
No.
We still not
was it ever found?
No, never found.
It was never found?
The bullet was never found.
This is tragic.
Oh, no. We need to put the
where is the bullet?
On a milk carton.
Where is the bullet? Bullet is,
we don't know where the bullet is. There might have been a bullet sighting here or there, but we never found a bullet.
Or maybe you heard the bullet before you saw the bullet.
Yeah, we probably could have heard it, too.
I mean, with those distinct features you just mentioned, it should have been easy to find. Hey, just look for a car when you turn
left.
No, that
was the new car.
Oh, okay.
The one that made the noise, the new car. The bullet was just this hatchback. And, you know, we let one of our buddies use the car, and he was a fullback. And he was from Detroit, too. Actually, I end up playing with him here. He got drafted. He went to UT, ended up getting drafted. I forgot. Fleming, was it? No, it wasn't Corey Fleming, because Corey Fleming was Fleming was the fullback that went to UT and then ended up playing with me for a minute. But it was a fullback that we let use our car for a bit. You know, he wanted to go on campus or whatnot. So he ends up, mind you, Sean and I are about 175 pounds. This dude was about 250, somewhere about 6'2", 250. He ended up breaking our seat, you know. When we got in the bullet, we can only lean all the way back. Like, the only thing you saw was the top of our heads when we were driving.
Hey, Derek, I think I know who stole your car.
Well, I stole it.
Baby Jared stole it.
Guilty. Guilty.
Do you think it was a Michigan person that stole it?
I don't know who it was. It could have been. They could have painted it blue and green, you know, maize and blue, whatever that ugly color is.
Oh, man. This is a sad story.
The best part about your first car is it's not pretty.
No,
it doesn't run very well, but you will love that car until the day that you die.
Man, we were sad that the bullet got stolen. We were sad.
That is sad.
They never found it. So
R.I.P. to the bullet, man.
Where is the bullet? We got to solve the mystery.
Kevin is on the line with a question for G-Mace. What's up, Kevin?
What's up, guys? Happy Friday.
Kevin, are you calling to report the whereabouts of the bullet? Do you know where the bullet is?
No.
MIA bullet.
I would let you guys know for sure. D-Mace, I just turned 38, so by NFL standards, I'm a senior citizen.
Yep, pretty much.
And, yeah. I just wonder about this sometimes. If being 38's old, you know, and you've got a locker room full of, you know, 22 to 35-year-old guys, basically all young men, they're all making, you know, good money, but some are making buku money and some are making, you know, pretty good money. And then you got all the egos. How difficult of a working environment is something like that?
Thank you for the question. That's a good question. You know, it's not necessarily, you know, it's never a bad working environment in that sense. Based, you know, guys, you know, treating you bad because you don't make as much money as they do. When we go into the locker room, you know, we're not talking about a guy's contract or how much money he's making. We know. Everybody knows. And you figure, man, that guy earned it. You know, we know exactly what he does in this building on the practice field, what he does for this team. So if they're giving him that amount of money, he deserves it. Only time we bring up money and stuff like that, and it's always in sort of a kidding way, is right before we get ready to get on the plane. Like, you know, guys, we talk about guys' outfits and, you know, that's when sort of money comes involved. It's like, oh, we know who got the money. That guy's wearing that. And we kid guys about that. We go back and forth. But it's never been difficult, let's say, in the locker rooms. I'm just going to say in the two locker rooms that I spent the most time in, Baltimore and here in Nashville. Nashville, Tennessee, there was never a talk about someone's money or someone making, you know, just because Steve McNair made this much money or B-Hop made this much money, they didn't treat nobody no different from everybody else. Just, I'm a rookie. They treated me, if they treated me a certain way, it was because I was a rookie, not because I made the least amount of money. You know, it had nothing to do. So managing those egos in regards to money-wise, there was never a problem in the Tennessee Titans locker room, nor was it a problem in the Baltimore Ravens locker room. So, you know, maybe in other sports it happened. I don't know. But I'm just telling you from my experience in the two locker rooms that I spent the most time in, that was never an issue. Guys, you know, we would never venture down that road to talk about somebody else's contract.
One texter texts in with a question for D-Mays. Says, do you think that Marcus Mariota would have had a better career thus far if he was drafted by a team that was more stable, with less turnover on the coaching staff, and with a staff that made an offense around a skill set?
You know what? I think had Marcus I said this at the time Marcus was quarterback, and I know I said it about Jake Locker. I said Jake Locker comes from a system where it was spread out wide, four or five wides on the field. And whenever they got into a two-minute situation with Jake Locker, it seemed like he thrived in that situation, you know, because it was more familiar with him. Then once everything started to condense, that's when he had some troubles. I think had Marcus Mariota day one, and I don't know if he was or whatever, but how long Marcus and Arthur Smith worked together, what? When Arthur, a year?
Maybe a year, year and a half. I'm trying to remember. Did he have a full year? Mm-hmm. I don't think so. I feel like, because it started off with Wisenhunt.
Yeah.
And then there was the Mike Mularkey mm-hmm. group with Terry Rubisky.
Mm-hmm. And I like Terry Rubisky. I mean, Terry Rubisky is one of my guys. Then, I just like him.
The Vrabel regime came in, and LaFleur was the original offensive coordinator, and then Arthur Smith. So he had a ton of different offensive coordinators.
I think had Arthur Smith from day one, or a Arthur Smith type from day one, because he flourished. Was it under Arthur Smith where he had one of his best seasons? Was it under Arthur Smith?
Arthur Smith was named OC in 19.
Yeah.
So he would have had that half season in 19 before Tannehill took over in the 19th.
Yeah. So he flourished. That was not under Arthur Smith. Yeah. That was under Mularkey and Rubisky.
Yeah,
that he had his best statistical year.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Had he had either Arthur Smith for his full tenure or Mularkey and Rubisky, if he had one OC for his full tenure, because it seems like he really worked well under that Mularkey system, whatever, I forget what system that was, but it seems like, why? Because, and I said this about Marcus long ago, I said Marcus thrived throwing the ball in the middle of the field, because that's what he did in college. Watch his college tape. A lot of it was in between the hashes. And granted, the hashes are a little bit wider in college football, but everything was inside the numbers with Marcus at Oregon. He had trouble throwing the ball outside the numbers, always. And I think he still had trouble to this day, throwing the ball outside. Had he had someone that really just concentrated on his strengths, throwing the ball in the middle of the field, and slowly work him into throwing it outside, I think he would have been a much better quarterback. Again, quarterbacks truly thrive under systems that is beneficial to them. That's why we talk about Anthony Richardson. If he goes to Carolina, that's a good situation for him. Why? Because the structure is built around him. He can sit, wait, and then go. They have everything in place for him to succeed. If he goes anywhere else, another team possibly, even if he comes to the Titans, I think from a structure standpoint right now, I think they're better off for a guy like Anthony Richardson. They can come in, sit, learn everything else. But these quarterbacks, if you put them in the wrong system sometimes, it may not turn out the way that you thought it would turn out.
All right, the parting shot here as we wind down to ask D-Mace. Eric in Bellevue reports, I saw the bullet delivering pizzas out here in Bellevue. We have a report. We have a sighting. That would be a story.
Hey, we need to check and see if the seat is broke. If the seat is broke,
that could be the bullet.
That's the bullet.
It made its way all the way from East Lansing to Nashville.
Man, they kept that car for that long? Good Lord.
Bullet has seen some things over the years. Appreciate y'all for sending in your questions for D-Mace. Coming up next, I don't want to call this person an unsung hero, but this is a hero that we just do not sing about enough, and we saw it again on display last night. We'll explain coming up next. Caroline Willie D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.